This week's episode of the Moderate Podcast is brought to you by Relief Factor. Pain from everyday living, exercise, or just getting older is one of the leading causes of trips to the doctor and sleepless nights. It interferes with daily activities and can even keep us from spending time with the people we love. If you have everyday pain, it stands to reason you need something you can feel comfortable with taking every day. That's why doctors have invented 100% drug-free Relief Factor. Now, tens of thousands of customers are using Relief Factor every day to become mostly or completely pain-free. 100% drug-free Relief Factor features four key ingredients that each work on a different metabolic pathway to support your body's natural healing processes to respond to pain and inflammation. Now you can try Relief Factor too. The three-week quick start retail price of almost $70 is now available to our listeners at just $19.95. Head to the link in our show notes to find out more. Start your journey to better health and less pain today with Relief Factor. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Moderate Podcast for Saturday's June 26th, 2021. Glad to have you as always. And I think this shorter format of the show is here to stay. There's no reason to believe that it's going to get longer. And there's a couple of factors in that. Number one, again, I've been just not having a lot of time to do show prep. And as a matter of fact, today's episode, in terms of what we're going to talk about, may be a little bit of on the head scratching side, like this is kind of a weird thing to talk about on a political show, although it does have some bearings on politics. And this is where kind of my take on local government and my knowledge of local government will probably guide in the conversation a little bit. But it's a combination of time, and also, with Trump out of office, there really just is not as much to talk about. And I think that we're going to be, just having to kind of muddle through what's going on. It's kind of, boring stuff. But coronavirus is continuing to dwindle down, even though the media is still trying to keep it alive with this Delta Plus. Is it Plus? Delta Plus? I can't remember what it is. Again, you have my dog shaking in the background all over the place because I still can't put them in the garage. You're going to hear jingling of things because they decide that they need to shake every 5 seconds while I'm recording, walk around, and have their nails clip on the hardwood floor. They could just lay down. I think that would be great. Anyway, that's just all to say that there's just not a lot of time and not a lot of material on this show. And so, anyway, I digress. So, on the coronavirus, real quick, again, they're trying to make this whole thing about this Delta variant into a big deal. But it really isn't a big deal. It's not causing any more deaths than normal. Even if it's more contagious, it actually might be less deadly. And the number of cases that they're talking about is very small relative to the whole, and all indications are that the vaccine is very effective against it. So all those factors mean that it's probably just a nothing burger, and it's the media trying to keep the coronavirus relevant because they're running out of ideas to get ratings. I think people listening to this show, they're already probably invested in politics regardless of how controversial things are or not. And so that's why I think that our audience, we're pretty consistent in terms of the number of listeners we have and all that stuff. But I think the traditional media and the major media companies rely on things that will attract more viewers. And they're just not getting that. Although there was a couple of major things that were certainly newsworthy. That we're actually going to talk about today. And but with COVID and now with, California being opened up, employers easing up on restrictions and things like that, I've already noticed that traffic was really kind of starting to get back to pre-COVID levels. Not quite, but it was starting to edge that way. And I think it took another step this week with the reopening a lot of California industry. But I don't know if it'll get 100% back to that, because you still have the factor of some people still working at home, and that they will continue to work at home because, quite frankly, you know, they found that they can do it, they like doing it, and their employers are okay with it because they didn't lose productivity. And ultimately, it could lead to happier employees. Now, in my case, working at home was harder. In government, personal connection is a big thing. And maybe that's an old school type of mentality a little bit. But we have noticed that working being back, you know, in person, working with the public does make things different. It makes things a lot better. And so we've certainly enjoyed it, but the traffic does indicate that, you know, a good majority of people are going back into work. Obviously, if you do crafts and trades and things like that, those you have to do in person. You can't Zoom call plumbing, right? You can't Zoom call HVAC repair. You know, I guess you could have a consulting service where you call, you know, you're on the phone with somebody and you walk them through how to fix their air conditioner. But I have a feeling that probably wouldn't go very well. So obviously, like in some cases, you know, a lot of those, and a lot of those people didn't even have any time off at all because they were considered essential. But there are a lot of other things that you have to do in person that you can't do over the phone. So that's where that comes into play. But, you know, again, we talked about it last week, the fact that we're a service economy, right? We're more and more getting to be a service economy. Some of those things are in-person experiences, but also some, like, you know, working in offices and consulting and things like that, and intellectual type of things, which can be done at home to a certain extent. So that's why I think that shift was already happening. The pandemic kind of accelerated it a little bit. And there are a good number of people that still want to work from home, or they want at least work. They want to live. They can live basically wherever they want because they can work at home. So a friend of mine that I work with, her daughter actually is going through this exact thing. She's a consultant. And so she's going to be moving to New York City. And she can do that because, you know, it doesn't really matter where she lives. She can still travel to her clients. And then when she's not at her clients, she can work from her apartment. So she can basically live wherever she wants. And she's done that. She's, you know, lived at home for a while. She moved up to San Francisco to a family member's house. And now she's moving to New York. So, you know, there's different things that you can do, different, you know, you can have more flexibility in terms of where you live. And that has really kind of driven some of the real estate prices in places that, and it's accelerated faster in places that are more affordable. Because now it's like, okay, well, now I can live farther away from the office because either I don't have to go in as often or I don't have to go in at all. So now I can actually go further east or north or wherever outside of the city and get a house that allows me to have more space, that's more affordable, things like that. But what that's going to have the effect of is it's going to raise the prices in those areas because there's going to be more demand, which for me is a good thing because I've already been living out in the suburbs, I guess if you want to call them that, here in Southern California. So, you know, I've already kind of you know, paid for those lower prices, and now I get to build up my equity because other people are joining us out here. So, hey, works for me. So, and this kind of dovetails a little bit. It's a stretch of a transition, but it dovetails into the discussion about infrastructure. So, apparently, the Senate Democrats and Republicans who have been working on an infrastructure deal have struck a deal this week. President Biden had almost put that deal in jeopardy, and it still could be in jeopardy because of things, some of the things that he said. One of the things he has said is that, well, he won't sign that without a reconciliation bill. He wants them to be done in tandem. And Republicans are like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. That's a kind of a bait and switch here. What's going on? Like we're working on just the infrastructure bill. Why are we talking about that as well? I mean, that you can't change the deal once we make a deal. You know what I'm saying? And now, to be fair, that was probably always understood to be the case. And so it's not like it should be a shock to the Republicans. But because Biden made that gaffe and he made that statement, they can take advantage of it and play to their base again and say, look, hey, we didn't know that, even though they totally did. But their constituents don't know that because they don't, I mean, and it has nothing to do with intelligence. That just has to do with the fact that they're just not as engaged in this thing. And so if someone says, well, wait a minute, there's a bait and switch going on here. Like, we were working on this deal. Now you're adding this other thing after we made a deal. What's going on? That plays well to the average person that really isn't paying that close attention to politics. So that makes sense that they would take advantage of that kind of thing, because all politicians take advantage of any mistakes, whether it was intentional or not, that are made by their opposition. That's just the way it goes. But a couple of things have happened this week that really call into focus the need for increased infrastructure. So a few weeks ago, we saw in the Memphis area, the border between, I believe it was Tennessee and Arkansas, where they had this bridge that was showing damage that looked like it was actually almost corroded all the way through in a beam. Now, the bridge is still standing, obviously, but they've had to close it down as after discovering the crack in this bridge. And we've seen other bridge collapses before. We've seen back in 2007, there was the I-35W bridge collapse in Minneapolis. And then we had another bridge collapse, a smaller one. It was a pedestrian bridge in Washington, D.C. Now, that was caused by a truck colliding with the bridge, and then it just collapsed. Now, of course, they're coming out with reports saying that the condition was poor. And let's see. So according to this report, there were two pre-stressed concrete beams that were in poor condition. Bridge showed exposed corroded reinforcing steel and delaminated and cracked concrete interior walls, according to an inspection that was just done this past between February and May. So just this in this year. So obviously, there are a lot of bridges that are considered quote unquote poor. Does that mean they're in danger of imminent collapse? No. But does it mean there's a higher like possibility of it? Yes, there is. Now, again, this bridge wouldn't have collapsed had it not been struck by a truck. The truck had actually had its hoist or some kind of beam or something like that raised. Oh, it's the subframe was raised as it struck the footbridge. So again, this was, you know, when you see something like that, it's like, oh my gosh, this bridge just collapsed on its own. Well, it turns out there was a collision with it. And so now, fortunately, nobody was killed. A couple of people were injured. And so there were three crashes. I think the only vehicle that actually got trapped underneath was the truck itself. So, you know, all things considered, this actually didn't turn out that bad. But again, anytime something like this happens, it does bring the attention to the fact that our infrastructure is crumbling. Now, when you have, this is especially a problem in the Midwest and the Northeast, where the infrastructure is older. None of these bridges were designed to last forever. They couldn't be, because of how you use them. You know, people will say, well, you know, you have the Greek, you know, the Roman Colosseum and all the Greek things that have withstood thousands of years. You have the pyramids, things like that. They don't make things as good as they used to. True enough. But those, the infrastructure that was built back then didn't have the stresses of multi-ton vehicles going on them every single day, thousands and thousands of them crossing them a day. So the bridges that we have today, the infrastructure that we have today, has a lot more wear and tear because of how we use them. So that is going to, you know, and these structures just cannot last under that stress forever. They can be designed to withstand lots of things, lots of weight, earthquakes. In California, actually, we probably have a little bit of an advantage in infrastructure because everything's so overbuilt because of earthquakes. So we're building it to withstand earthquakes, but the side effect, the side benefit of that is that they will last a lot longer because they are designed so, so well. That also makes them way more expensive. So when you come to California and you see bridges, they look a lot more sturdy and a lot more beefed up than when you go into the Northeast and Midwest. That's just in my observation, because I'm looking at these things going, gosh, that's the support beam for that bridge? That seems like nothing, because I'm so used to seeing how we have it in California. So, you know, obviously it you build things to withstand different conditions based on where they are. So, you know, the question of how we repair that is a good question. And it's very, very expensive. You know, when you talk about just a single bridge to replace, you know, that footbridge, just a pedestrian bridge over an interstate, probably will run you, $1 million, $2 million just for that one little bridge. A major bridge can run you $15-20 million, just one. And there are thousands and thousands and thousands of bridges in this country, a lot of which are rated the same way this bridge is, or was, because it's not there anymore. So there is a lot to be said about spending on infrastructure. And while we pay all this money towards our gas taxes and blah, 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 you do, but it's not enough. And that's the thing. You know, the idea, the concept that we are paying too much in taxes. Well, relative to what? I mean, the question always is, well, relative to what? What does that mean exactly? Who are we? What are we comparing it to? That's what always gets me about this kind of thing, is what are we comparing it to? And also, the standards that we have changed because we learned things. And that leads me to the building collapse in Miami. That was probably obviously the biggest news in terms of disasters that have happened in the past week. Actually, probably even longer than that, if you consider how devastating that thing was in Miami. So if you haven't heard about this, a part of a condo complex in Miami collapsed this past, I think Thursday or Wednesday. I think it was Wednesday that this happened. And that was just incredible. And there's video security. If you can find the security camera footage of the collapse actually happening, it looks like it was a planned implosion. I mean, that's what it looks like. It just came down all at once. You know, it's almost like the bottom was dynamited. Now, it wasn't. Now, if you look at the part that's standing, I'm just looking at a picture of it right now. You basically have the building sitting on these beams. So you have the underneath part as a parking garage, and in the building is sitting on these beams. Well, according to a 2018 structural report, which was required, by the way, and that's going to get to the bigger discussion in a minute, these types of structures when they're 40 years old have to be inspected and get recertified for occupancy. And so they did this structural report back in 2018, because this building was built in 1981. So it's really interesting. Here we are 40 years later, and this building collapses right at when it was due for recertification. So there was an engineering consultant named Frank Morabito. He found an abundant cracking and spalling of varying degrees in the concrete columns, beams, and walls of the ground floor parking garage. The report also included photos of cracks in the columns and spalling, which is concrete tumbling, that it had exposed steel reinforcements on the garage deck. Morabito noted several other reported problems, including residents complaining of water coming through their windows and balcony doors, as well as deterioration of the concrete on several balconies. Though some of this damage is minor, most of the concrete deterioration needs to be repaired in a timely fashion. These documents will enable the condominium board to adequately assess the overall condition of the building, notify tenants on how they may be affected, and provide a safe and functional infrastructure for the future, he wrote at the time. He added that the repairs were needed for maintaining the structural integrity of the building. And this is when I just love the press when they say this kind of crap. though he did not specify if he believed the structure was at risk of collapsing. Maintaining the structural integrity means that it could collapse if you don't maintain that. That's what that means. And they're not going to specify, they're not going to write in that type of report like, oh, this building might collapse, because you don't know. I mean, you don't know. Could it, could if it, if you don't have structural integrity, could that happen? Of course it could. That kind of goes without saying. So the fact that he didn't specify if he believed the structure was at risk of collapsing is just it's completely unnecessary to add to the story. I mean, this just goes to show reporters just, you know, they really don't know anything about anything. I'm sorry. And I have reporters that are friends, but God, you guys just say some of the stupidest things sometimes. The New York Times talked to Kenneth Director, who is a lawyer representing the condo association, told the New York Times that repairs in the building that were suggested in the report had set to begin soon. They were just about to get started on it. Morbido declined to comment on the report. The Times noted that the 40-year requirement for recertification for buildings was established following a previous building collapse in Miami in 1974. So as of right now, 159 people remain unaccounted for. It's just horrific, you know, that this kind of thing can happen. Now, the causes of this it's going to take a long time to get that. Why that happened, why those problems that were even in the report from 2018 were there, is going to be something that's going to be probably sifted through in the next weeks and months. Right away, there was talk of that climate change is causing this, because these buildings are built on very weak soil, because these barrier islands don't have a lot of support on them. So could the foundation that they're built into be a factor? Could be. Is it climate change? Could be, because they say these barrier islands shift as a result of rising sea levels. But again, you know, that gets to the, you know, then it gets to the whole argument. Well, what's causing that? Blah, blah, blah. Now they've warned for years that building on these barrier islands, so you have these barrier islands that exist in Florida and North Carolina has famous ones. Virginia has some even, you know, so you have the South and Mid-Atlantic states that have these barrier islands that they've built a lot of infrastructure on, to the tune of about $3 trillion worth of real estate, that they shouldn't be there at all. Irrespective of climate change, just that the structural, they cannot build something that is structurally integral on these types of islands. So that's part of the problem that we see here. But the bigger thing is, when we talk about making this a political thing, and not making it political, but when you have people that are limited government, and the question is always, how much is too much government and how much is too little government? If you did not have standards in place, and a lot of the government standards that we put in place are usually in reaction to things that happen. So for example, this 40-year recertification process. And if they don't pass that recertification process, pretty much the building has to be abandoned and is condemned to either be repaired. And if it's beyond repair, it has to be demoed. And there have been reports, not a lot, but there have been reports of other similar types of buildings that have been shut down in Florida as a result of this. Now, if it weren't for government coming in there and having these rules and enforcing these rules, the question is, would we have more things like this happen? And I would say yes. You know, when we talk about small government and government overreach and overregulation and things like that, one of the things that we should not and cannot compromise on, in my opinion, is building codes. those types of standards for whether it's electrical, plumbing, actual structural integrity. Because at this point, this is a building that was built 40 years ago, right? And so anybody that designed, if there was design flaws that are found in this building, and maybe it passed inspection at the time, and it wouldn't pass inspection today, let's say, because standards have increased, have changed, there's no recourse for these people at all. And if you don't have those standards in place to begin with, and you don't have people in government that are enforcing those rules, you would have many more of these things happening. Because I believe that you would have cut corners. And there are some things that barely pass inspection and then cause problems down the road. Like the house I lived in before I moved into the house I'm in now, we had tons of issues in that house. Tons of them. And that's why you have a home warranty. But we heard that they ended up firing a lot of their subcontractors because of the shoddy work they were doing. But it was partially because they weren't passing inspections and having to do a lot of repairs and a lot of warranty repairs. So even after they did pass inspection, they still were having issues. So just imagine what it would have been like had those inspectors not had them correct some things. Yeah, would the cost be less? Probably, sure, it would, because they're not putting the work into it. And the reality is that, well, that's personal responsibility. No, it's not, because a lot of people don't understand this stuff. That's why you have these things. You rely on those things. You rely on experts to make sure that those things are correct. And the only ones that are going to ensure that they're correct is a government agency, quite frankly. I'm sorry, people might not might not agree with that, but it's absolutely true. The only place that will do anything to ensure that type of standard is followed is a government agency. Why would the private sector have any incentive to do that? Unless you'd have to, you know, some parts of me when I listen to libertarians and they talk, you know, taxation is theft and government needs to stay out of everything and blah blah blah. Government probably should almost be non-existent. To the point where, you know, you have to. It's kind of a pie in the sky thinking, utopia type of thinking, that everyone's going to be good to each other. Everyone's going to pull their weight. No one's going to try to rip anybody off. We're all going to be pulling our weight because that's what good people do. And I'm sorry, but that's very naive to think. The reality is most people are going to cut corners anytime they can. And so a libertarian society, to me, would be infinitely more litigious than we already see today, which we already are a very litigious society here in the United States. But it would be even worse if that were the case, because what other recourse do you have to keep people accountable? So, you know, they do something and you go to the court, so you're going to have to beef up the court system, which is government run, right? And so, you know, it's a buyer beware. I mean, you know, you buy a house and things start collapsing. Well, buyer beware. You know, you got what you paid for. And you know what? The market's not going to correct that, because the problem is that these problems that happen slowly, way on down the line, when the people that built them are probably dead, who's then responsible for them? You know, when you have a bridge collapse, you know, and those things happen, even with regulation, even with these standards, they still happen. They happen a lot less than they otherwise would, though. And so if you had these things happening way more often, who's going to be the ones to correct them? Because the reality is, again, if they did a shoddy job building a bridge and it collapses 25 years later, 30 years later, because of the shoddy work they did, it was supposed to last 60 years, only lasted 30, and then collapsed because it was built like crap. Who's going to be accountable for that in that kind of world? The people that designed that, they're dead. Are you going to get rid of statutes of limitation? I mean, I don't know how you get around that. So to a certain extent, for life and safety purposes, and I include building standards in that, you need government to do that because you need a responsible body for it. And, you know, people are going to like, well, government's corrupt. Well, yeah, some people, you know, everybody has corruption in their thing. But most government officials, including yours truly, actually have integrity and want to do a good job and are doing things for the right reason. I don't want to regulate people just because I want to have the power. I want to regulate the things that we should be regulating to make sure that stuff like what happened in Miami either doesn't happen at all or happens very, very, very in limited times. And it's because just something, some freak thing went wrong. Not because no one's checking on it. I don't want to regulate everything to the point, though, where we're just regulating just to regulate. At that point, yeah, government's is too big at that point. I agree. And does that exist today? Absolutely. I'm not arguing that it doesn't. But it's not one extreme or the other. You don't go just from too much government to no government at all. There is a compromise there. And it just, I think there's libertarians that believe that, but I just don't see it. And they just think that people are going to be able to take care of it themselves. How are you going to do that? People are shysters. There's too many people in society that are shysters. And I just said, there's not a lot of people in government that are like that. It actually probably is. There's more integrity in government, like in government officials, than there is in other places of society. And that's a very unpopular opinion. And maybe I have a lot of bias towards it, but it's true. I see it all the time, all the time. I see people online. I see people in other industries always trying to make, you know, trying to take advantage of situations. Government has no incentive to do that because we are the only people that are accountable to everybody, not just our customers. We are accountable to everybody. And most of us take that job seriously. And if you don't, you won't last in the job because you won't see the incentive for yourself and you'll either get out of it or you won't go into it at all because you just don't have that mentality. People that have the mentality that they're only in it for themselves don't last long in the business. They don't. I've seen it. I've seen it happen. Personally, they don't last. And so this actually reminded me, and here's a perfect example of why this kind of thing is needed. This reminded me of a story I read about of a building called the Harmon. This is in Las Vegas. So City Center is a big development in the heart of Las Vegas on the Las Vegas Strip. So it's actually technically not in the city of Las Vegas. It's actually in unincorporated. What people don't understand about Vegas is that everything south of, I believe, Sahara Avenue in Vegas, everything south of that is actually not part of the city of Las Vegas. The Las Vegas Strip, most of the Las Vegas Strip is not actually in the city of Las Vegas. Now downtown, you know, where the original part of Vegas, that is in the city. But everything south of Sahara Avenue is actually in unincorporated county territory, which includes City Center, which makes it even more confusing because it's called City Center, even though it's not in the city, but I digress. So City Center has like the Aria, has a lot of upscale places. It was a very, very expensive development at the time, probably the most expensive development of its type ever in the world. And one of the buildings that was supposed to be built there was the Harmon Hotel, Spa, and Residence. So the tower was planned to have 400 rooms, 207 condos, ranging from 800 to 2,900 square feet on 49 floors. The hotel's pool deck was planned to be on the roof, and the exterior of the building was finished in 2009, but interior work to correct construction issues was to continue into 2010. So when they were building this thing, work on it in late 2008 stopped after government inspectors discovered construction defects. They discovered improper installation of critical steel reinforcements after 15 stories of the building had already been erected. Now, there is some controversy as to why this was not found sooner, right? But ultimately, it was found that the county was not liable in this whatsoever. So the air caused a major change in the building's design. So instead of being 49 stories, it was going to be reduced to 28 stories. And the residence piece of it, the condos, were removed entirely. Due to the delay and alterations to the design, the building was delayed past the other city center projects and was scheduled to be finished in late 2010, but was delayed indefinitely. There was litigation pending due to the defects, and the construction was halted. And at that point, MGM Resorts International, the owner of City Center, targeted the building for complete demolition. So then there was a fight about the demolition. They wanted to do an implosion, but then they said, well, there's too many things around it. So they actually dismantled the building floor by floor. And that was incredible. So you had this hotel. It got built, goes up, and then it came down. And you really, if you didn't hear me talk about that, you probably didn't know it was even there. You may have been to Vegas and saw that it was, you know, they were taking, it looked like they were building something, but actually they were taking it apart. And so, but that goes to show, because they said basically, even with the modifications that they made, it probably wouldn't be able to withstand a major earthquake. Now, Nevada is not as well known as California for seismic activity, but it does happen there. And so they thought that even with the modifications that they made, that ultimately this would not have probably withstood a major earthquake. So they brought the building down. Now, when you look at the outside of it, there's a picture of it I'm looking at right now of the completed interior, or exterior, I should say. It looks beautiful. It's a beautiful looking building. And you would never know that there was something wrong with it. But that's why you have inspectors. And that's why government inspection of these things is so important. If it hadn't been for that, this building would have been built to its full height, and you could have possibly had a disaster worse than what you had in Miami. And no one would have known it. So this is why it's important. So it prevented an accident from ever happening because of inspections, because the government requires them. And because if the government wouldn't require them, it would be an additional cost that most contractors simply would not take on. Now, maybe the insurance companies would require it, but they may have felt, you know what, the increase in cost in insurance is worth more than actually paying for the inspection and actually building it to a standard, to a certain standard. So, you know, we have industry standards that, you know, we have some industries that self-regulate. And we found that sometimes that doesn't work as well. And so things like this, things like building inspection, are so important. Now, I'm not saying that what happened in Miami would have been prevented had you had proper building inspection, because they probably did, obviously, right? And that's why they have this recertification process. Maybe what this does is maybe instead of 40 years, we go to 30 years. We go to 30-year reinspection and recertification. Maybe that's the answer. But, you know, then if something happens at year 29 or 30, maybe we need to do 20 years type of thing. And so this does call, I hate to say it, but it does call for more government regulation in this case, I think. So, you know, I've shown you an example of where government inspection can actually prevent accidents before they happen. And it caused a major company to actually just take apart the whole building because they couldn't fix it. The problem was so bad, they couldn't even fix it properly, and they had to take the building down rather than try to repair it. All because of government inspection that probably prevented a disaster from happening. Because again, if this is not discovered during inspection, and again, these are county inspectors that discovered this. If it's not for that, this building gets built to its full height. And who knows what would have happened at that point? Who knows? You know, you can say, well, you know, they would be have a big lawsuit on their hands. Yeah, but that doesn't bring back the lives of the people that would have been lost in a collapse like that. I'm sorry, but I will take a little bit of government regulation if it spares a life. Sorry. Because the liability we're talking about for a company is dollars and cents. But all the dollars and cents in the world will not bring somebody's life back that could have been prevented had you built it properly, had you passed government inspection. So if absent that, you build this thing, it collapses, hundreds of people die, and then what? They get sued, their insurance company pays out, big whoop. You still have several hundred people died completely unnecessarily, all because you didn't want to have government inspections. So I'm sorry, but that's the case. Again, I'm not arguing that everything government does is necessary. I'm not arguing that at all. So please don't construe it that way. But what I'm saying, though, is that you cannot completely just get rid of it altogether. That's all I'm saying. So as this, I'm going to be paying attention. Probably won't talk about it on the show again, but I'm going to pay attention to what's happening with this building in Miami, because I'm always fascinated and I'm always curious about why these kinds of things happen. So I'll keep an eye on that, and maybe we'll report on it later once there's a major report out on it. But as you can hear the music, that means we're out of time. Thank you for joining us this week on The Moderate Podcast. Remember to visit our website at themoderatepodcast.com. We are on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, although I've been non-existent on any of those platforms lately because, again, just don't have time. I wish I did have time. Don't have time. I'm on vacation this week. I might maybe make a post or two. There's also not a lot to post about, honestly. So who knows? But anyway, check out our website to find all of our links to our social media. And also don't forget to check out Relief Factor on the show notes from this episode. So until next time, whenever that is, everyone stay safe and keep it real.